to join the Hop Train Happy Hour. Book your experience at winetrain.com using booking code LHNS. Restrictions apply. Your Napa Valley and North Bay News is brought to you by Computer Engineering Group. They can fix your broken screen on your iPhone or Samsung. CEG also repairs Apples or PCs in-store or at your home. They even provide IT services for your business. Call 833-CEG-9701.
An affordable health plan shouldn't be an oxymoron. Our plans are created around the simple idea that a health plan should keep both you and your wallet healthy. At Western Health Advantage, we provide a wide range of healthcare options together with local doctors and hospitals you and we trust. So you find the perfect balance of an affordable health plan with quality healthcare providers. That's an advantage you can count on, literally. To learn more, visit choosewha.com. Western Health Advantage, advantage you.
Hi, this is Barry Martin. Join me Thursday morning on the KVON Morning Show. We're going to focus on food and wine for a good portion of the day, starting off in the 7 o'clock hour with Jason Wise, producer and director of Psalm 3, which is opening at the Cameo Cinema Friday night. We'll also have Paul Franzen, our weekly look at food and wine news locally, 7:30-ish, and then around 8 o'clock, Jamie Brown Miller with our In the Kitchen show. Tune in, join us here on KVON.
Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. The very finest in cars, SUVs, vans, local staff, locally owned. You want to head in and get a car, you find Danny, he'll sell you a car. Todd's in charge of vans. Crystal will help you out in the boutique, my favorite spot to hang out. And Justin, of course, the head of all sales. All fantastic people, locals, locally owned. Our owner lives right here in the Napa Valley. And of course, Christmas is coming. And that means you could get in there now and get a mini Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle or maybe a sled. They have so much to offer and a brand new remodeled showroom like none you've ever seen before. Just 15 minutes across Jameson Canyon. Hit Highway 80 North, jump off on Sassoon Parkway, and there you are. Head on in for a beautiful showroom full of beautiful people. It's Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, your local Mercedes-Benz dealer.
Hi, this is Sports Director Ira Z. Smith, inviting you to visit our website at kvon.com. You'll find local, regional, and national sports news. There's a schedule of upcoming local play-by-play games, as well as you can click on audio to hear archives of recent play-by-play games. KVON also streams the station live online at kvon.com. All your Napa Valley sports action at 1440 KVON's website, kvon.com.
I drink beer because I should. If there was a song to sing, I sing it and beer you drink.
Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good! It's good!
And now, from Napa Valley, California, it's Beer Nuts featuring brewmaster Colin Kaminsky.
Welcome to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. It's another beautiful beer drinking day here in the Napa Valley. Big Daddy Love John Herkins is feeling a little under the weather this morning. I think he had a long night of hand-to-bottle combat, but I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Sitting here in the studio with Jonathan Wright. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi there. How's it going?
You know, things are good. Can't ask for a nicer fall morning, huh?
It's been weird.
Yeah, been beautiful weather. Sunday I spent the whole day on the beach swimming in the ocean and
really?
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Oh, no kidding. Where'd you go?
I always go to Salmon Creek. That's my favorite.
Ah, all right. All right. And then you go with the fam?
Yep, with the kids loved it. They had a great time.
Nice.
The youngest was a little afraid of the water.
Yeah, kind of like me.
She yeah. didn't like the waves at all. So she, but the creek is closed off from the ocean right now, so it kind of stops in a little pond area.
Okay.
And so she liked to hang out there, and yeah, where a lot less action was going on. But my oldest and I ran in the waves a lot. And
nice, cool. Did you make any beer stops on the way back?
No, we didn't.
Some stuff to go.
We didn't. We pretty much just did a there and back thing.
Ah, okay. Well, you did do some research.
I did actually, yeah. John would have been floored that
I'm proud of you. I actually
showed up with a beer.
You went and visited a new brewery.
Yep, I did. A friend of mine wrote a column on Brute IPAs for Brew Your Own magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was asking him about what Brute IPAs would be on my way home. And so he said that that he knows this guy really well. And Luis at Del Cielo Brewing.
Del Cielo or Del Cielo, we're still trying to figure
that out. Yeah, we're still trying to figure it out. It's the old Spanish word for heaven.
Yeah.
I was able to sort out.
Okay. Brand new brewery in Martinez.
Martinez, right in downtown Martinez. Nice little space.
Martinez has a downtown.
They do. actually, there's some really neat old buildings there, but it's pretty...
It's pretty run down. Actually. Yeah. But that's one of those places you usually just pass on through.
It reminds me of Napa in the 70s.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
But a lot of money is going in. You're seeing buildings get restored. A lot of the vacancies are getting taken up. So I think Martinez is going to become a neat little destination place and not just an oil town. And
yeah, might still be affordable to live there right now, I'm sure.
Well, right, especially if you're working in Concord.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Right.
The commute to Concord's gotten pretty crazy if you're living out Antioch area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Highway 4 gets really backed up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything's getting backed up. Speaking of, though, Russian River just opened their new...
They did. I saw ribbon cutting photos on Facebook. And yeah. So they...
New in Windsor, right? New
yeah.
facility but, and tap room... Restaurant.
Their intention was to make a destination brewery. So.
Oh wow! So yeah, this is it.
It is. You know, he's really good friends with Ken Grossman of Sierra Nevada's son,
mm-hmm.
and I think he was trying to take all the Sierra Nevada ideas as far as sustainability and a restaurant facility, a cultural. Thing that matches the Russian River culture, because Russian River Brewery has its own culture. And
yeah, sure. Yeah, a friend of mine went there and showed me a bunch of pictures. Looks very nice. Sounds like it was a very cool experience. He's, you know, big beer buff, so or beer nut, I should say, on this show.
You know, the rumor, and I don't know if he was able to work it out, the rumor was he wanted to do this all without investors. So hopefully he was able to fund it from the other breweries.
Hmm.
And I believe that means Ferdinando Court will be closing. So that's where the production brewery was.
Yeah.
Right. And I know the goal was, I haven't talked to them in about a year, but the goal was as soon as the new brewery opened that they were going to sell... all of the equipment at Ferdinando Court, with or without the lease to the property. And somebody would be able to just walk in and start brewing.
Okay.
In a proven brew house. So without doing any of the setup, any of the infrastructure. And
cool.
Yeah, so all he was going to do was take all his barrels and everything else he was leaving behind. Hmm. So I don't know if it ended up working like that in the long run, but I know that was his goal. And
yeah. Well, I know I'm... looking forward to going there because I never wanted to go to the other one. It was always so packed. The one,
you know, I used to go 11 a.m. on Sundays. So it's right when they opened on Sundays. Sundays they did
that's
happy hour.
Funny because that's what somebody else told me. I go early on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's happy hour, so the beers are cheaper and
right.
And they do happy hour all afternoon on Sundays.
Yeah.
So so that always worked out well for me. But gosh, I haven't been over there in a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Do they have anything anywhere else, or is it just? I'm trying to remember. I know the tap room obviously was the most popular.
So they have that tap room there, and behind it is the original brewery from when Vinny was the owner of Russian River. Yeah. So before that, Vinny was the master brewer, and it was at Corbell Winery, The same equipment that...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ha. And it was at Korbel Winery. And then when Korbel decided to get out of the brewing business, they made a deal, which I think was a steal of a deal, probably, like a $1 deal or something. And Vinny got to keep all the recipes and all the names and all the marketing. And
yeah.
And that's when he moved to downtown out of, off the Korbel property out there on Russian River.
Right. Okay. So, but they didn't open a, any other tap room somewhere.
No other tap rooms. So the Ferdinando Court production facility is where most of the production comes out of, and where they all the bottles come out of now.
But now this is they always talked about how they're tapped out, like as far as you know, capacity.
Right. This so. Should up their capacity a lot, so, and yeah. It's,
so maybe we see more. Stuff on tap around here, or are they still going to be anti-Napa? I don't know.
Well, it's not that they're anti-Napa. It's just they haven't had a lot of opportunities to find places to go on tap.
I think they have fun sometimes, you know, pretending like they're anti-Napa, though.
You know, they do still come to Napa every week, and you can still get it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I'm not trying to give him too much grief, but I was stopped into Cadet last night, and they actually have Pliny the Elder on tap.
Oh, nice.
I'm just mad because I still can't get it on tap.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard. They really do try to focus on people with lots of faucets. And I know, name's escaping me, the place on third.
The brewery, or what are we talking about?
Another place that's got Russian River usually.
Somebody told me.
The sports bar.
Norman Rose.
Norman Rose. Yeah. Norman Rose
that's right.
Gets deliveries as well.
Yeah.
I don't know what they have on tap at any given moment.
Well, I asked one of the owners at Cadet. I was like, how do you keep getting that on tap? And she said, I only had to give him my firstborn.
Yeah, right. You know, when I was trying to get the bottles of the sours for Downtown Joe's, back when Joe's carried the sours, he would come on the same day every week, and he would park out in front of Joe's, and he was delivering bottles to Zuzu's, that little tapas place there. So I would sit there and wait for him to walk out to his truck. And I introduced, you know, said, hey, my name's Colin. He's, I'm Brandon. Waited another week, sat there. Hey, Brandon, how you doing? And finally, after about 6 weeks of me sitting there just making small talk with him, he's like, do you work around here? Well, yeah, as a matter of fact. And talked to him for another 6 weeks. And then finally he's like, yeah, maybe we could bring some sours. Why don't you call Natalie? And so I called Natalie and I said, hey, you know, Brandon was thinking that maybe you guys had some sours for me. Don't really have room for any of the IPAs, and I know you're maxed out on IPAs, but boy, we don't ever want to make a sour, and we'd sure love to have some around. It started a relationship that lasted us 8 years.
No more secret tap there, huh?
Yeah, well, I used to have the sour, a secret sour tap that you had to be in the know to get because I could only get, you know, 5 gallons a month for it. About one keg a month would show up.
Yeah, right.
When I left, they didn't pursue that relationship on either side, and it just kind of went away.
Bummer.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm gonna, you know, pursue it as rigorously as you did, but
well, you know, it just kind of worked out. It was a good break every Tuesday morning. And so anyhow, today we kind of wanted to talk about brewed IPAs. Brewed IPAs are a new style, and we kind of give a lot of credit to the Bay Area brewers for making it a style.
It's our thing. We have a thing now.
It is. Kim Studevanti at Social Kitchen in San Francisco, out in the Sunset District there, is kind of... he certainly popularized it. A lot of us were playing with enzymes and drying out IPAs before him, but he as far as I can tell, coined the term Brewed IPA, as well as started winning some awards and getting it noticed. And that's when we see Berkeley pick it up, and a lot of the breweries in Berkeley are doing it. And it's kind of become the Bay Area's answer to hazy IPAs. They're crystal clear normally. They're very dry, usually IPA levels of alcohol, so not really big in alcohol, like 6 to 7 is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, because you know, and it's kind of a weird thing because you know, you find in doubles and triples there's a lot more sweetness,
right? So the yeast at the end of fermentation gets a little bit lazy and it can't quite ferment all of those more difficult to ferment sugars like it would in a lighter alcohol beer. It just gets tired. The alcohol is a poison to the yeast. And so it just doesn't really do well at the end, and you end up leaving more sugars. So we've done the West Coast IPA style, introduced using sugars because they're more fermentable than barley. So adding sugars to try to dry them out. And that was a trick that the Belgian brewers had done on big beers for at least a century.
Yeah.
And Vinny was doing both Belgians and big IPAs. I learned of the trick from Vinny. I don't know how far back that little trick goes in IPAs.
Wait, adding sugars for more fermentation, or the adding?
Adding sugar to get a drier finish, drier final gravity.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you add sugars, and since they're 100% fermentable,
don't you have to add more yeast?
If the yeast is yeast,
dying,
So I put sugar in the boil when I do it.
Oh, okay.
So the sugar's there the whole time, and the yeast it takes the easiest sugars first, and then it moves on to the hardest sugars. So if you give it a bunch of really easy sugars, it really chews through them right away. So you see people add dextrose or maltose. The Belgians used to add candy sugar to get some of those darker caramely characters out of the candy sugars. Candy sugars are caramelized, and you can get them light, medium, and dark. I don't know any brewers that really want any of the dark candy character. So I think everybody that I know is probably using dextrose. And in California, we burn through a lot of dextrose to make IPAs.
I see. The easy sugars.
The easy sugars. Yeah. We call them yeast crack.
Yeah. Nice. I did not realize easy sugars. And well, I have heard the term complex sugars, I think.
Which is before, starches. So, yeah. Brewers would call that a starch. But yeast definitely has a preference for dextrose and maltose. And some yeast can do malt trios, but some yeast can't. But in any case, we've gone a long ways without John here bugging us. We've actually gone a full 20 minutes without opening a beer here.
That works. Hey, we're getting through it. We do need to try one of these.
So
I brought in what is the first one that I ever saw, which is from Barrel Brothers. It was the first Brewed IPA. And they call it the Champaterade. And, you know, I knew nothing about the style. I just thought it was something they were calling their beer. I was actually oblivious to Brewed IPA being a thing at the time. And which is kind of funny because it hasn't been out for very long. So I've been, pretty oblivious. But I just looked at it as a great IPA. Honestly, I didn't find it to be, you know, ridiculously dry in the back. I just found it to be a nice, tasty, not too bitter IPA.
And that's what I'm finding about them as well. They're not super high in IBUs. They're really not trying to.
Yeah, I find if you do it effectively, it softens that hoppy bitterness.
And the other thing I find that they're doing is they're doing a lot of the not citrus fruits. Or not citrus hops. So don't expect a big grapefruit bomb, but maybe a big stony fruit bomb or a big apricot bomb.
Yeah.
I had one recently that tasted just like apricot.
Yeah, and this definitely has a little bit of that in it as well.
And I had another one that was very strongly passion fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, check out that belt.
Yeah, let me grab this can here. So, let's see.
Always lots of good literature on the Barrel Brothers cans.
Barrel Brothers Brewing Company, Champaiterade Brut India Pale Ale. A fine sparkling beer, 7.5%, and only 30 IBUs. Very, very low in IBUs. Style notes. A malt base of two-row, white wheat, and dextrose sets the stage for a vigorous fermentation tag-teamed by a dry English ale yeast and amylase enzyme. The resulting liquid, with a final gravity below 1 degree Plato, is adorned with an opulent dry hopping of Centennial and Simcoe, which is interesting because sometimes I get citrus out of Centennial, but not in this beer. The conclusion, a delightfully dry and drinkable beer with hot flavors and aromas of candied citrus and passion fruit. Brewed and canned in Windsor. Very nice. Very nice beer.
Yeah. What does it say on the...
They talk about pop cans, not corks.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for the water sucks, drink Champaiterade, which is the
that's the tagline at the bottom. Yeah. So, pop cans, not corks, a relatively new style with roots in Northern California. The Brut IPA supplants its uniqueness from two seemingly dissonant elements not commonly found together in an IPA. Hop forward intensity with a dry malt finish. Utilizing an amylase enzyme, the buxom malty mouthfeel typically found in IPAs is firmed up, leaving a highly quaffable dry finish with all of the hop intensity expected in an IPA. Water sucks. Champaiterade is better.
There it is. Yeah, okay, so I didn't understand most of that, but what I understand about Brut IPAs is that it's this enzyme, right? That basically, some people think it's lame because it's counterintuitive. You're adding all this sugar, and then you're putting in this enzyme that's basically taking away all that sweetness.
Well, but that makes alcohol. So the idea is to have a dry, high alcohol beer.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you're fermenting all the sugars into alcohol.
Right. The enzyme makes more of the sugars available to the yeast, so it dries it out.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And the original use in brewing for the enzyme was to make light beer. So in the 70s, brewers adopted amylase and started making Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light. Those were all amylase enzymes. And so what they would do is put in less barley and less adjunct, whether you're a rice or a corn brewer, but then add that enzyme. And instead of getting a 5.5% beer, you know, with 180 calories, you'd get a 5% beer with 110 calories.
Yeah.
So it was how the original light beers were made. I came up with the idea independently 5 or 6 years ago when I was trying to dry out my triple IPA. I wasn't getting it dry enough and was like, oh, well, let's get some amylase enzyme. We'll dry it out. And I liked my triple to finish not only below 1 Plato, but below 0 Plato. Was where I liked it the best. And
yeah. Well, I still found some sweetness in that triple, if I remember correctly.
It depends on which. So I found that the yeast health was so critical that you could go anywhere from 1 Plato to -2 Plato with the exact same recipe. Just depending on how well you got that yeast working in the beginning.
Well, I feel like the thing with doubles and triples, like I was saying earlier, is that they do have a little more sweetness. Which seems like I don't know if it's to mask the alcohol a little more because the alcohol content's always a little higher in the double and triple.
It's just a necessity of the process.
Yeah,
it's just hard to make them drier.
Yeah, it's like so like if for a double and a triple, I don't think you'd want to brutalize it if I could use that term.
That works for me.
You know what I mean?
I actually really liked it. But I like things dry in general. I drink dry wines. I like dry whiskeys. I like, in general, I like things very dry. And I tend to even in styles that are supposed to be malty, to try to go at the dry end of that style.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you either liked or didn't when you had my beers. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
That definitely polarized some people.
I see. Yeah. Well, this one would be, this next one would be kind of an example of, I would think, what you would expect. Whereas I feel like the Barrel Brothers kind of really had a really nice balance.
I really liked the Barrel Brothers.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that it was only 30 IBUs, but I really liked it.
Yeah, sure. It's almost like you got to put IPA on there just so it'll sell. I mean, you could have called that a pale ale pretty easily.
But not at 7% alcohol. That might be a little tough.
Yeah, I guess it's more the alcohol content than the IBUs that they're, you know. But that is kind of the thing. You always got to call it an IPA now if you want it to move. But this one has definitely got some serious dryness to it. I went, hey man, you got a little slurp in there. So we
about
got
a tenth of an ounce, you know.
So we got this one is from Drake's Brewing, and they call it the Bright Side Extra Brut. They did put the word extra in there. So here we go.
You know, it doesn't quite have the big nose of the Barrel Brothers.
But what it has is that finish that is completely indicative of sparkling wine, of a dry brut.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, a really clean finish.
Mm-hmm. Super dry.
A little bit of a tea-like tannin character from the dry hop edition.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Adds to the dryness. One of the things I'm finding with these brewed IPAs is there is nothing left to hide anything. And there are definite characters to dry hopping and mashing itself that beer normally covers up that kind of exposed bare in the brute.
Really?
And I didn't notice it as much in the Barrel Brothers. I think they did a better job of camouflaging it, but I'm picking it up in this beer. You know, some characters that are always hidden behind other things are just right up front here in the Drakes, like the tannin character from the dry hopping.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way it finishes. Finishes with almost no bitterness. This is another really low bitterness one.
Yeah, but this is... Yeah, I don't know, because I still get a little bit of that bitterness, and maybe yeah,
so,
I'm just
so this one's
mixing.
50 IBUs. So more.
Yeah, definitely more kick.
It's also 7% alcohol, and fortunately they're not as verbose on the label. Drake's Brewing, San Leandro, California. Dry, crisp, and hoppy, Brightside is a new style of IPA called Extra Brut. Enzymes are added during production to fully ferment malt sugars, creating an ultra-dry, champagne-like body and a unique hop experience. Brightside features notes of white grape skins. I get that, actually. I'm surprised. Citrus rub pine needles and orange creamsicle.
Okay.
Well, I don't really get the creamsicle
not,
part.
Yeah, not quite getting creamsicle, but...
But I do get some citrus, and
I like that was written more for the layman. Barrel Brothers, they just assume you know everything.
You know, it was always interesting when you would talk to somebody in the brewery. You never knew if they were going to be more educated about beer than you or less, and
yeah.
So you never really knew where to start conversations.
No, I appreciate that they go there, because then I can just look things up and figure out, you know,
right,
exactly what they're talking about, and you know, if you really want to, you know, delve into to what goes into brewing, they have it all right there. They're not trying to hide anything from you, so I appreciate that, definitely.
You know, I think this one reminds me a little bit of the pith of an orange.
There is some and the tannin, definitely there is kind of a tannin characteristic that you're really getting in this one. I wouldn't say this is one. It's funny because some people say that the brut IPAs are a little more approachable for people who don't necessarily like IPAs. I wouldn't find this one to be that exactly, because there is that bitterness and that dryness, and I find that approachable, a lot of times you need that little bit of that sweet malt that's left in there.
Certainly compared to something like Stone's Ruination, it's more approachable.
Well, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's It just kind of depends on what style you're coming from. I think this would be a lot easier for a brand new craft beer drinker to approach than a big IPA.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts.
If you need anything from a simple home repair to a major remodel, you need to know about Home Advisor. It's a totally free service that instantly connects you with top local service pros.
Home Advisor is a very easy way to find a home contractor, and for me, it's the only way.
You can use Home Advisor for everything: your house cleaning, your painting,
electricians, plumbers, handymen. We've had nothing but fabulous every single time.
Just select the type of work you need done, and Home Advisor's ProFinder technology instantly finds top pros in your area.
You can read customer reviews of the pros, even use their cost guide to find out what hundreds of other repair and improvement projects cost in your area.
I think everybody should use HomeAdvisor. In fact, I tell everybody to use HomeAdvisor.
HomeAdvisor is a total solution to any type of work you would ever want to do around your house.
And best of all, it's completely free. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. HomeAdvisor.
We must all work together to be better prepared for wildfires. I'm Joe Segura, and I work in emergency communications at PG&E. As an additional precautionary safety step, PG&E is urging customers to sign up for alerts at pge.com/mywildfirealerts. We can alert you if we need to temporarily turn off the power because of extreme fire danger conditions. We know how important it is to have safe and reliable power in your home, so we will only turn off the power as a last resort. Please sign up today at pge.com/mywildfirealerts.
Beer is good.
Beer is good. Beer is good. Let's go drink some beer. Beer.
Geeking out with Beer Nuts.
Welcome back to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. Geeking out on brewed IPAs. I'm Colin Kaminsky in the studio here with Jonathan Wright. He had the great idea to bring in some brewed IPAs today, and we gotta
acknowledge that this is a new thing, and it's distinctly a Bay Area thing, and we'll see how far it stretches. I did see an article that came out recently in SACB that was kind of dogging on brewed IPAs a little bit. It's like, should we be making such a big deal out of this? And they interviewed a couple people, and I won't say what breweries they're from, but one of them said, yeah, we tried it. I wanted to like it, but I didn't, and the customers didn't like it. And it was like, okay, for one thing, this guy didn't sound very excited about it to begin with. Oh,
right.
So how good of a beer are you going to make? And then another guy did what we were talking about was doing it to a double IPA, much stronger in alcohol.
Which is going to be harder.
Yeah, and he said that didn't work out. And so, but I think the idea that works with a lot of people is having that balance and making it a little lower in IBUs and kind of finding that balance between that where that dryness actually works with the rest of the beer, I guess. But in this article, it seemed like they were just kind of on the negative side as far as maybe Sacramento is just a little too far from the Bay Area. They're a little jealous, or I don't know.
Compared to the pushback that that hazy IPAs got there.
Oh, yeah. Same kind of thing.
Yeah. Eventually. But to a much lesser extent. So we'll see where it goes. To be honest, a lot of the guys that are making hazy IPAs are in the forefront of this brute stuff. I get to try them side by side, and I like the brutes better.
Yeah. Well, you like that dryness.
I do. I always have
a little dryness in the back. Yeah.
And I think it's a really challenging style. I think of these two Barrel Brothers. I think did the better job. I don't know if they have a little bit more experience than Drake's. It seems like Drake's was almost there, but needs a little bit of tweaking.
Well, the guy who makes the beer there is kind of like you. He's a brainiac, man.
right?
I mean, you read the literature on there. He's like, you know, hey, this is what I'm doing right here.
You know, maybe we ought to get them over here.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yep.
It's been a while. I know they're getting very busy.
I know they are. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah,
they got a lot going on. But I forget what I was going to say. But, yeah, oh, yeah. The thing that the article did mention that I thought is very true is when something gets big enough, everybody kind of has to try it.
Right.
You know, so it's like whether brewers want to go there or not, it's almost becoming a thing where you got to have a brewed IPA now. You know, particularly if you're in this area, you know, eventually people are going to come in and say, where's your brute IPA? You know, it's going to be that kind of a thing. So it's like whether or not you're up for the challenge, you might have to do it pretty soon.
And it definitely takes some experimentation as far as keeping your yeast healthy and making all that work. The other thing that's interesting is, so in the mash tun, when we use enzymes, there's enzymes present in the malted barley. It's what we're doing when we're mashing is activating amylase enzyme naturally. It gets denatured in the boil, so there is no further degradation of the starches once you boil.
Yeah.
If you add a bunch of amylase to the fermenter, it never gets separated out. So that amylase is going to continue to break apart your starches, which give you a bunch of the mouthfeel, and expect these to change as they age.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the other, that's one of the things I liked about doing it in the triple IPA, was there was a lot more sugars to leave something behind. Because even at cold temperatures, enzymes, for every 10 degrees that you change the temperature of an enzyme, it works half as fast. So in the fermenter at 70 degrees, let's say, probably a little lower, but well, just to make math easy, at 70 degrees, it's running 8 times faster than it will at 40.
No kidding.
Yeah, 2 to the third. So so it does slow down when you get it cold, but it doesn't stop.
So it's still happening.
It's still happening. So it is changing during aging. And
well, I would think it wouldn't age too long, though, because of if you've got a strong hop presence, you know, that the hops aren't going to. You know, typically what I understand with aging beer is that the hops, if you've got a lot of hop in your beer, it's not going to age as well. It's going to kind of.
Right, right. So hops are both good and bad for aging. So the good side of hops in aging is they have some molecules that will pull oxygen out of the beer. They're called reductones, and they can actually keep some oxygen from making the beer stale.
Right, it can preserve it for a while.
Preserve it,
and also which was the whole reason for it to begin with. Right,
it's also antibacterial.
Uh-huh.
So those are the good parts of hops, but one of the bad parts of hops is every 6 months the bitterness is cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
So that bitterness goes away, but also we're learning that these aroma molecules are really fragile and they tend to change over time relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And so some of these beers, like especially hazy IPAs, really don't taste right a month later. They really want to be consumed in the first few weeks.
A month later, huh?
Yeah. Even a month later.
Because I know with an IPA, you know, when I look at the bottle date, I want it to be within 6 months. If it's over 6 months, I'm like,
Certainly within 3 months. 6 months is even pushing a traditional West Coast IPA.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Because that's half the bitterness.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it kind of turns into something. There's like a funky flavor in the back of the throat I don't know how to explain it, but whenever I drink an old beer, I can tell immediately. I'm like, this is too old.
The worst character, and one we're fighting industry-wide to avoid, is the character of wet paper. So there's a specific molecule, transneanol 9, that gets created during aging in the presence of even the tiniest bit of oxygen. Hmm. And it's the flavor threshold is in parts per billion, so it doesn't take much of this molecule. It turns out we're writing an article about this right now, so the information's fresh in my mind. found a specific chemical in the malt that's causing it. And in the last 70 years, we've been slowly breeding it out accidentally. But some Japanese researchers, we're going to call this molecule LOX because the name is way too long to actually say. These Japanese researchers figured out a way to breed LOX-less barleys. And we're finding that they can't create that molecule. We're also finding that they can't create some of the head negative proteins. So we're seeing a lot longer head retention from LOX-less malts. And LOX-less malts are very quickly taking over the industry, but relatively new. 5 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to buy a LOX-less malt. And
LOX-less malt.
Yeah. And now we're seeing it. Some maltsters are going 100% LOX-less varieties.
Hmm. Somebody's going to come out with the Goldilocks-less. I don't know. I'm like deer in headlights right now. I'm like, All right.
So that's kind of exciting. I'm writing an article for the January issue of Brew Your Own magazine on LOX-less varieties. So if you're a geeky beer nut out there and you want to learn about it, pick up Brew Your Own magazine. And if you're
not quite as geeky like me, you're just going to pop another beer and say, congratulations on that, man.
So last night I stopped at Del Cielo, Brewing. You know, kind of a real quiet little bar on a Tuesday night. There was like five people sitting there, and the bartender wasn't all that chatty.
Oh, that's too bad. It's always a bummer.
So I wasn't able to really find out much. I got a
big crawler in here, though.
I did pick up a crawler for the show.
Too bad we don't have Big John here. I know. John would have helped us out.
Otherwise, we're going to just pour out two-thirds of it.
Oh, man. Brutal.
I don't know.
Brutal IPA. All right, here you go.
Even in his text message last night, he sounded sick.
Sometimes
you can actually just like read into the text message. Yeah. It's like, oh, you sound sick. That doesn't sound like you at all.
No talk. Right. Need sleep.
Yeah, right. It was
yeah. So, yeah, I'm interested in this brewery. This is one I hadn't heard of. So, Del Cielo or Cielo.
So, yeah, they must have had 12 beers on tap last night. A huge amount.
Wow.
Yeah. And hazy pale, hazy IPA, regular IPA, a West Coast IPA, a coffee pale ale. Okay. A stout
coffee pale, huh? Like Napa Smith was trying to do there for a while.
It was decent, and a bunch of beers, and all the way through the whole style range. They definitely weren't standing by tradition in any way, shape, or form. They had a black IPA. They had a red beer. I don't remember exactly what style it was. So the whole gambit of colors, the whole gambit of clear to not clear.
So they're going for it.
They really were excited about it.
Wow. And cool. How long they've been open?
One of the patrons at the bar said about 3 months.
Okay.
So, but I don't, that could, you know, when you're talking to a patron at a bar, that could mean 6 months.
Yeah. But that's under the radar for sure.
The brewer is a member of Doze, which is a big homebrew club in the East Bay that I've been a part of for 20 years. So I have met him, but it was before he opened the brewery. I recognized his name and I could put a face to it, but I didn't get to talk to him last night.
Oh, darn it.
He was kind of waiting for me, and I couldn't get there till 7. So he must have he either cut out or he got too busy to come out of the back.
Ah, bummer. Well, that's cool. You actually got out, got to check out a new place, and this is actually I kind of like this one. It's definitely more quaffable. It's more subtle. It's a very drinkable beer.
Yeah, so other than 7% alcohol, which interestingly, all three of these have been 7%.
This is 7.2, huh? Yep. I would have guessed it might be a little less.
Other than 7% alcohol, I wasn't able to get any information on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the Crowler is just a generic brewery logo. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any information about this flavor.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't give us anything.
But I tasted it last night.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, before I filled the Crowler, I wanted to taste it and make sure I wanted to bring it. And I do get a little bit of the that pithy orange character, that little dry, astringent hop character. But this one, I think, is it's more well-balanced with the dry hops. There's some apricot notes in it. That kind of rounded out a little bit.
Yeah. I don't get a whole lot of body.
Yeah, I don't get any body.
Yeah, yeah. Which I did get some from the Barrel Brothers, and obviously the extra brute had you know, more of a punch to it. But this is, like I said, super drinkable, and there's nothing funky in there.
No, I would say this is the cleanest of the fermentations. Mm-hmm. As far as yeast health very goes, crisp. I think they did the best of the three.
Very crisp and, yeah, very clean.
And really, well-mannered flavors. Not a bunch of mushy flavors well-behaved. That you can't quite identify. Just very, very isolated, separate flavors.
Yeah. Cool. So Del Cielo or Cielo, we got to figure that out.
Yeah, where's Will when we need him?
Yeah, gonna have to get these guys in here.
So Luis is doing a really good job. I was really impressed. I got to try five of the flavors last night, and
nice. Well, their logo has the DCB at the top, so maybe that's kind of what they want to be.
And angel wings,
and with the wings on it.
And their tagline is beer from heaven.
Yeah, there it is, beer from heaven. Cool. I'm gonna have to go check them out.
Yeah, we should actually. I'd love to go down there with you.
I find myself driving through Martinez all the time, and now there's an excuse to stop there.
Yeah, so definitely it's one to put into Google Maps if you don't know Martinez. Getting to the downtown, you kind of have to wind your way through the refineries.
Yeah.
and getting back out, it sent me back out in a weird spot.
Which is great. It's an adventure in itself right there. But it's Del Cielo, D-E-L space C-I-E-L-O. And, looking forward to checking them out. And I got to check out the new Russian River Brewery, too.
Yeah, I really want to get over there. And in fact, I was just thinking about it when I saw the ribbon cutting. Maybe we need to grab the digital audio tape here and go out and record a show.
Yeah.
I'm all about live radio. I've resisted doing pre-recorded shows. But that one might be worth going out and doing a show out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's as long as we can talk to somebody.
Well, yeah.
We're here at Russian River drinking some beer. Oh, this is a good one. Oh, now I'm doing Pliny. Now I'm doing Blind Pig.
Fortunately, I've known those guys long enough. We have access there. Yeah, so
we can get them to come out and talk. That would make a great show.
The new breweries are sometimes hard. Sometimes it's really hard to get somebody to talk beer just because they're so busy and they've got a lot going on, and sometimes you only get the sales guys, and sometimes you actually get the brewer. So, but with the old breweries here in the Bay Area, I've been to so many conferences with them that I can usually get a word in edgewise,
nice,
so to speak.
So, do you think Brute IPA is going to be an official category soon, or is it?
I don't know if it'll happen soon. I think it'll happen.
They're going to get some resistance, or
and that's the thing. The BJCP believes that it's their job to follow the styles, mm-hmm. and if it becomes a style, they'll write it in.
Yeah,
you know, they're trying to be proscriptive, not prescriptive. about how beers are made. And
how long did it take Hazy's to kind of officially be recognized?
It took about 5 years, or maybe 6 years, but
because it didn't seem like it took long.
But when they added Hazy, they added a bunch of other ones. They added Black IPA, and they added a bunch of them at the same time.
Okay.
So the IPA category went from three styles to what it is now in one revision.
Yeah, I don't know if Black IPA is going to stick around too long. I'm already not seeing him that much anymore.
P means pale.
Well, yeah, I know. They should just call them IBAs and IRAs.
You know, I always wanted to do, the Sinn Féin IRA red pale ale.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Irish people get awfully sensitive about making jokes about the war. So
yeah.
So I never did. But idea. Yeah.
But I mean, I think they would call them Imperial Black Ales or Imperial Red Ales.
That's what I've always called them.
But IPA is what sells. So you use IPA to sell your beer, basically. I mean, that's the reason.
Right. You know, it's...
So you can understand that, right?
No, I do. It's just... I don't think it does a service to the industry to dilute the word IPA.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said for it, but I think that's obviously why they're doing it. But it should be. It does bug me. It should be called an IBA or an IRA or...
Right.
You know. Or how would you do it? Because you had brown. Does anybody do an imperial brown?
Well, you see imperial browns, but you don't see them really hoppy. So you see them... high in alcohol, but not really hoppy.
I guess I mean not an imperial. I mean an India brown ale. Sorry,
I haven't seen one yet.
Yeah,
there's something about the brown malt that is kind of dusty.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't seem like a good match to me.
Yeah,
there's sometimes you find things that you know just won't go together. And brown malt and citrus hops.
So what are the malts that are usually used in black IPAs then?
So we have a choice when we're making a really dark beers. We have a choice between roasted malt, roasted barley, black malt, black patent malt, dark chocolate, and light chocolate. And these are all just different roasting regimes.
Mm-hmm.
You can start with the same variety and end up with all of these. The black patent has been dehusked, and so it gives you the dark color without the bitterness. So when you see these really dark beers, but they taste like a light beer, they're using dehusked malts to do it.
So like Death and Taxes?
I bet Death uses both.
Yeah.
I've done some that are 100% of the dehusk malts to get the darkness. I don't like the 100% dehusk malt recipes.
Mm.
They tend to not have enough of the roast character. It's nice that you can control the color and that roast character separately. The chocolate malts are really the darkest of the caramel malts. So they tend to add some of that caramely character as well as the
but
chocolate.
But there are
character.
Some that they play better with hops than others, it seems.
So the brown malt is a weird malt. It really does come out brown and not red.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is they're doing a regime that does no caramelization. So it even though it doesn't have quite the coffee character of the really dark malts, it does have this like, the character I think of is the crust from toast.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of see that. The toastiness, definitely.
Yeah. But the crust, not the good bread part, but the, but the toast part. And
you did make a brown.
I actually really like James Brown. Yeah. When they're done right, it's one of my favorite styles.
Yeah. I love browns. I just had a great one from Golden Road just yesterday. They brought us a sample. It was a get up off of that Brown or something. It was some James Brown reference.
Right.
Just like yours was
the James Brown. Yeah, we did James Brown ale.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we never had permission for, so that was always a little...
Yeah, sure. Under the radar. But that was an excellent brown. And then we've got the Alesmith Nut Brown. It's kind of an English style.
Did the Samuel Smith's?
Alesmith.
Oh, Alesmith. Oh, okay.
Out of San Diego. Yeah.
So Samuel Smith's Nut Brown was probably...
Samuel Smith is fantastic.
The first Southern Brown I'd ever had. And
yeah.
So there's two styles, Southern Brown and Northern Brown. And
is that what they actually call them, Southern and Northern?
Yes, and they're separate styles recognized by the BJCP.
Southern and Northern being like England?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And one is bigger and more fuller bodied, and the other one is lighter and drier. And
okay.
Yeah.
So when Alesmith says English style, they're not really...
that usually means Southern.
They need to clarify. Yeah.
That usually means Southern.
Yeah, it's a lighter...
It usually means London.
Yeah. Lighter, easy drinking... Yeah. Brown ale, and a lot of people, I don't know why, they just kind of equate brown ale with the darker beer, and they just don't go there, and it's pretty amazing how drinkable these browns are. They're not thick like your stouts and your porters. I don't know if it's ever going to get the recognition it deserves, but I think brown ales are some of, like you said, they're some of my favorite beers are brown ales, especially with a cigar. You know,
and brown ales might have a longer history. So when we look at the history of malting, we see a really big change. 1850s, 1860s, 1870s, in that range, and we start seeing them make lighter malts that were kilned with coke, with coal, as opposed to wood, and it made the malts less smoky and lighter in color. And it turns out that it coincides exactly with the ability to make clear glassware affordable to a pub.
Oh, really?
Yes. So the advent of inexpensive clear glassware, we think, really changed malting in England.
To make the beer, make sure the beer looks pretty?
To make sure that the beer looked pretty. It didn't look like a, you know, when you had a ceramic mug, it didn't matter if it looked like mud.
Yeah, like murky.
But then all of a sudden it had to be golden and clear.
That's interesting.
And it was a glassware innovation.
Huh.
the maltsters figured it out once they had to figure it out.
Yeah. And then, opened up a new world
there. Unfortunately, in that era, the malting was all done by a guild. And so the guilds didn't write things down. That was taught by verbal. Oh. You weren't allowed to share your information.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we're not really sure exactly how it happened.
Oh, interesting.
Anyhow, you've been geeking out with Beer Nuts on KVON 1440. Jonathan, thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
Community Grapevine.
Dr. Christine Gross with the Napa Valley Unified School District Magnet Schools. We invite you to join over 2,500 magnet students at Bel Air Park.